Okay, I got this crazy son-in-law. Nice young fella, but he's a city boy, and he thinks he's like a gentleman farmer. He bought a little farm, and him and my daughter, they live out there. A couple of weeks ago, I went out to pay him a visit, and it was after church. I had on my suit and everything, so I thought we were gonna have a nice lunch. But he says, "Hey, Dad, will you help me feed the pigs?" And I'm thinking, "Oh man, this can't go well." And so here we are. We're out in the middle of the pig pens, and he grabs this huge sow and he picks her up, and she's all muddy and funky, and says, "Help me with this." We carry this pig over to the apple tree, and she's taking one apple and another apple, and pretty soon she gets her fill, and we take her back, and then another pig, the same thing, back. And by the third pig, I'm tired of this. I said, "Wait a minute, wait a minute. Wouldn't it be more efficient just for us to pick a bunch of apples, take them over, and throw them in the pig pen, and let them eat the apples at their leisure? And that would save a lot of time." He thinks about it and he says, "Yeah, it would save a lot of time, but what's time to a pig?"
Good, good, good. So anyway, this man asked me my name, right? So I said, Tony, right? So he looks at me sideways and he says, "Do you have a stutter?" I said, "No, sir. But my father does, and the guy who registered my name is a jerk."
No, yeah. Yeah, that's good. Okay, there's some fellows out from NASA. They're out wandering around in the desert. Looks like they're trying to figure out what's going on. And one of them's even got a space suit on. So pretty soon, this tribe of Navajo Indians are on horseback, and they're watching these fellows, and they get curious. Pretty soon, they run down and ride their horses down and said, "What you doing here?" And they said, "Well, we're from NASA, and we're experimenting to see if man can survive on other planets, and Mars, and maybe the moon, whatever." And the old Indian chief, he gets very interested, excited even. He comes, rides forward, and he says, "Can I say something to these people from other planets?" And they thought about it for a minute, and they said, "It'd probably be a good PR thing." So they get out their tape recorder and they interview the old gentleman, the tribal chief, and they take everything in. And then they said, "We don't speak Navajo. What did you say?" And he won't translate. So they take it into the tribe, and everybody listens to it, and they figure maybe they'll get a translation. Everybody listens to it and laughs. And they're all laughing, but nobody will translate it. So finally, they spend some money. They go back to Washington, D.C. They get a Navajo translator, and he's listening to the tape, and he's writing things down, and he says, "Beware of these men. They're here to take your land."
That's good. Good. So, true story. So, my daughter brings home her fiance, right? So I bring him to my den, pour him a scotch. And I said, "So what are your plans?" Right? He says, "Well, I'm a Bible scholar." I said, "Well, that's very nice, very admirable, but hardly lucrative, right?" So I said, "Well, how do you plan on supporting my daughter?" "Well, I will study and God will provide for us." "Oh, okay. Well, how do you propose to get her a nice engagement ring?" "I will study and God will provide for us." I said, "How will you support your children?" "Don't worry, sir," he says. "I will study and God will provide." Right? So this goes on back and forth for a while, right? And reassures me, "Don't worry, sir, God will provide for us," right? So later on that night, my wife, she says, "Well, so how did it go?" So I said, "Well, He's got no job, no plans, but the good news is that he thinks I'm God.
Okay, I got one. This old fellow was going to a business meeting, and he really had to get parked. And he couldn't find a place. And he was not a religious man, but all of a sudden, he starts praying for a parking place. He says, "God, if you give me a parking place, I'll give up drinking." And then he still didn't get a spot. And he says, "If give me a parking place, please, and I'll give up smoking marijuana." Still no place. He says, "I'll go to church. God, give me a parking place. I'll go to church every Sunday. And right then, a beautiful parking spot opens up right in front of him. And he says, "Oh, God, wait a minute. Hold on. God, I think I got it covered here. Never mind."
So when I was young, I had this job in the summer for working at a zoo, right? So my job was to feed the various, you know, exhibits 3 times a day with the feed and all that kind of stuff, you know, right? Anyway, so it was 4th of July weekend, and like really the busiest weekend. The main attraction at the zoo was this chimpanzee named Buttons suddenly drops dead. So the zoo manager, I mean, he's just out of his mind. He's distraught. He doesn't know what to do, right? So anyway, and they were teetering on bankruptcy, by the way. So anyway, so he comes over to me and he says, "If you don a chimpanzee suit and be the exhibit for a while, I'll double your salary." He says, what was I going to say, right? So of course. Anyway, I get the chimpanzee suit and I start acting like a chimpanzee and I've got my act and, you know, I'm making up all this stuff and whatever, and having a ball, by the way, and the people are loving it. They're all cheering me like crazy. It was just wild. Anyway, so I'm up there one day, and I'm going across the lion's, exhibit pit kind of thing, you know. And I'm going above there, hand over hand, kind of acting like a chimpanzee, and the crowd is going wild, right? All of a sudden, I lost my grip, and I fall down into the lion's pit, right? Right in the middle, right in the center. And I start screaming, because, you know, I'm for my life, right? Next thing I know, the lion creeps up, and he pounces on me. Right? And I thought that was it, right? That was the end. You know, one bite from a lion, boom, you bought it. Anyway, all of a sudden he crawls up, whispers in my ear, "Shut up, or we'll both get fired."
That's good. Okay. I'm with my family. We took a nice European vacation. We're in St. Mark's in Italy. We're looking at this beautiful. We're out in the courtyard, and the big pavilion, and looking up at this gorgeous clock, and it's got all the each number has astrology signs and everything. It's just a wonderful piece of work. And pretty soon, this nice Italian gentleman, he comes up to me and he says, "Ah, signore, you like the clock. You like the clock. I sell you the clock." And I said, "What? You'll sell me the clock for how much?" He said, $1,000, no problem. He said, I know people. So I'm thinking, okay, well, that'd be great. I'd love to have the clock from St. Mark's. You can't beat that. So I happened to have $1,000 with me, so I gave it to this gentleman, and he said, "Signore, no problem." He said, "You wait the right here. I'll go get you. I'll go get the ladder. We'll come back. We'll get you the clock. Everything will be fine." So I give him $1,000, and I'm waiting right here. And 1 hour goes by, 2 hours. Pretty soon, I realize, oh well, this guy duped me, you know. And so next day, I decide I'm going to get even. So I went back out into the courtyard, and sure enough, there he was. He tried to sell this clock to somebody else. I tapped him on the shoulder, didn't even recognize me. He does this so often. And I said, "You know, sir, I'd like to buy this clock from you." And he says, "Oh, beautiful." He said, I know people. He says, "It's $1,000. And so I pull out the $1,000, and And I give it to him, and he says, no problem. He says, I'll go get the ladder. I said, nope, I'm not a fool. You stay right here, and this time I'm going to go get the ladder.
It's good. It's good. True story. I had this old friend of mine, Hank, right, from high school. I hadn't seen him in a long time, right? So I ran into him on the street one day, and he looked awful. He was all distraught and whatever. Hank, what's wrong? He says, I've gone bankrupt, and I'm going to lose everything. I said, gee, that's awful. That's just absolutely terrible. But things could be worse. Anyway, so time goes by, and go into the diner with my wife, right? And I see in the corner, there's Hank sitting. He's got his head in his hand, and he's like, you know, just depressed looking. So I go over to him. Hank, what's wrong? What happened? He said, my house burned down, and I lost everything. I said, geez, that's absolutely terrible. Oh, geez, I feel sorry for you. That's really awful. But things could be worse. So anyway, so time goes by, and I run into him on the street again. And he looks, again, depressed, distraught, whatever. I said, Hank, hey, what's wrong? What's wrong? He said, my wife has left me. What am I going to do? My wife left. Everything's gone. I said, gee, that's awful. That is just terrible, but things could be worse. So all of a sudden, he starts getting angry at me, right? And he says, you know, every time I tell you something terrible happened, you say things could be worse. So I said, well, yeah, because it could be me.
Right. That would be worse. Yeah, things could be worse. Okay, so... Oh, we're thinking about the a nice golf story here. The two brothers, they used to play golf every week. They'd go out and play golf together, and they'd have nice talks and visit and everything. With the one brother, he finally says to the other brother, he says, you know, I love this game and I love playing golf with you. But if anything ever happens to you, I don't want to be morbid or anything, but if anything ever happens to you and you get to heaven, would you find a way to get back to me and let me know there's golf in heaven? So I'd really like that. So they laugh about it and go on, but sure enough, the brother, a couple of months later, something happens to him, and he's gone, bless his heart, and... But the brother is laying there in bed one night, and he wakes up and he looks and he says, wow, there you are. You've come back, and I'm so touched. But you remember I asked you, I wanted to know if there's golf in heaven. And the brother, he looks down on him and he says, yes, there is golf in heaven. And he said, but the bad news is you're teeing off with me next Tuesday.
Good. But, true story. I used to be a monk, right? In a monastery, you know, you take a vow of silence, right? So, anyway, so you're only allowed to say two words every 7 years, right? So, you know, 7 years go by, and I go see the abbot. That's the head guy, you know. And I said, what are your two words? I said, well, cold feet. I said, oh, okay, cold feet. Another 7 years go by, right? And I go and see the abbot, and he said, what are your two words? And I said, bad food. Oh, okay. So 7 more years go by, I come back to see the abbot, and he says, okay, what are your two words? I said, I quit. And he looks at me and he says, that's not surprising. You've been complaining since you got here.
That's good. I like that one. I had a friend who was scientific. He was always doing calculations, and he never do anything unless the calculations and all the numbers worked out. And he was scientific that way. So. And he wouldn't fly anymore because he's afraid the statistics were against him, that there'd be a bomb on the plane. So I was listening to him, and I said, okay, that's all right. I didn't want to get into that. But then I was found myself on the plane to San Francisco a couple of weeks later, and I said, hey, Fred, what are you doing here? I thought you didn't fly because of statistics. And he said, well, I did a new study. He said, there's never been two bombs on one plane. So I found a way to fly. I just bring my own bomb.
That's good.